Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors. But we will help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to have you with us. I want to start in the good news, bad news file. Good news, bad news. Newser.com reports that school attendance is down across the board, across the country, everywhere. They report that students have been absent at record rates since schools reopened during the pandemic. So that's the government schools. This might be all schools, actually. It's a survey of government schools, but it may include private schools. Don't know. But students who are considered chronically absent, those statistics have also ticked up in the most recent data available. Attendance worsened in every state with available data. Some states, it's so bad, they don't even have data available. That's how bad it is. There's no one even in attendance to gather the data. That's bad. Oddly enough, absenteeism did not correlate strongly with state COVID rates. At which point, everybody says, wait a minute, we're still including COVID rates with anything? Are we really? Who's still doing that? Maybe the government officials there in the school districts, maybe they haven't got the memo that that's over. Oh, I think they don't think it's over. But oddly enough, absenteeism did not correlate strongly with statewide COVID rates because COVID is a disease that generally doesn't keep kids home from school because they generally don't get all that sick from it. Kids are staying home for a myriad of other reasons not related to COVID. It's to everyone's dismay because, you know, everything's related to COVID. For the rest of my adult life, apparently everything will be related to COVID. So maybe I'm delusional in thinking that it's over with. Maybe that's me. So forgive me if that's me. But why are kids staying home from their government school sentences? Newser.com says that the people gathering the data, those are the ones who care enough to still pay attention and show up and be in attendance to gather data. They say the reasons include finances, housing instability, illness, transportation issues, school staffing shortages, anxiety, depression, bullying, and generally feeling unwelcome at school. So why would the kids generally feel unwelcome at school? Well, because the teachers fought for 2 years to keep them home and basically said, we don't want you back. Stay away. And so now the kids, they don't feel, that's a good thing that kids generally feel unwelcome at school. One of the positive developments from the pandemic. Let's see, another lasting effect from the pandemic. Parents and students have been conditioned to stay home at the slightest sign of sickness. Tell me that's not true for crying out loud. So basically, everybody got a 2-year lesson in fear and laziness. And that lesson was learned well by everyone. Fear and laziness are easy ones to learn. And we had a 2-year comprehensive course in fear and laziness. And those lessons learned will not be overcome. In my opinion, they will not be overcome without some significant event to counteract those lessons. So when you're afraid and lazy long enough, it takes some significant event to shake you out of that. And that's what's going to be required for the kiddos and for the governors and the mayors, the city council, the county board of supervisors, all of them they're going to have to be slapped awake at some point and told that they just have to cut this out. Stop it. And I'm happy to be there and slap them. I'd volunteer to slap them and just try to shake them out of their fearful, lazy, stupid hysteria that they've all fallen into. All right. Now, speaking of hysteria and hysterics, we go into the widespread hysteria file where we check in Montana. That's right. A Montana court has ruled in favor of a group of youths who have accused the state of violating their right to a clean environment. That's right. They brought a suit against the state of Montana, and District Court Judge Kathy has ruled, let's see, today. Oh, no, that's Julia. I'll get to her. Oh, let's see what District Court Judge Kathy, she ruled in the case, and she said that limits on the analysis of greenhouse gas emissions and corresponding impacts to the climate violates the youth plaintiff's rights to a clean and healthful environment. Not just clean, but healthful as well. She went on to say, quote, plaintiffs have a fundamental constitutional right to a clean and healthful environment, unquote. Now, I'm going to stop with that. So you notice she says that they have a fundamental constitutional right, not just a fundamental right, not just a constitutional right, a fundamental constitutional right. And notice they have a right to a clean and healthful environment, which is not just clean, it's also healthful. And that right to a clean and healthful environment includes climate as part of the environmental life support system. Unquote. Kathy. That's quoting Kathy from her more than 100-page ruling. So Kathy, probably not going to write the great American novel, but was able to vomit out 100 pages on how the children deserve clean and healthful fundamental constitutional environment life support system. Thank you, Kathy. We appreciate that. Now, the reporters, the journalists over at Breitbart report that this case has been closely watched, mostly because it's like a train wreck and nobody can believe that children are being allowed to file suit against a sovereign state for the right to something as amorphous as a clean and healthful environment. So that's one of the reasons it's being closely watched. Another reason is because there's a bunch of communists who want to use this in order to wipe out and finish taking down America. Well, wait a minute. That's not here in the article. The journalists at Breitbart did not cite the communist takedown of America. That's something that I have made note of. They say it's watched closely because this is the first time climate experts were questioned on the witness stand. Breitbart reports without any comment on how ludicrous that is, that someone can claim that they're a climate expert and actually be put on the stand in a court of law. But they make no note of that because I don't think they understand. I don't think the journalists at Breitbart get it. Or maybe they're just trying to be fair and impartial and report just the facts. They could say a stunning rare instance in which this is the first. The first case involving a constitutional claim against a state. Well, that can't be true. Anyway, all right, I'm going to move on because I'm confusing myself trying to analyze the urinalism. Now, we have a quote from a Marxist child molester, one of the people involved in the satanic communist takedown of America. Her name is Julia Olson. She's the executive director of the nonprofit called Our Children's Trust. And she says, quote, today, For the first time in U.S. history, a court ruled on the merits of a case that the government violated the constitutional rights of children. Children, I tell you. Through laws and actions that promote fossil fuels, that ignore climate change, and disproportionately imperil young people. As fires rage, fueled by fossil fuel pollution, today's ruling is a game changer that marks a turning point in this generation's efforts to save the planet. From the devastating effects of human-caused climate chaos. It's chaos, I tell you.
Unquote. A human-caused climate chaos out there in Montana. If you've been to Montana, you've experienced the violent climate chaos that is obviously related to, what did she call it? Fossil fuel pollution. That's causing all the chaos for the children out there in Montana. That is Marxist, communist, child molester Julia Olson of Our Children's Trust there, alongside Judge Kathy out there. And so that is all part of a legal strategy to humiliate reasonable, intelligent people by forcing us to listen to experts and children tell us how we're destroying their environments. And we're all supposed to say, thank you, sir, may I have another? And we're supposed to entertain the ruling of Judge Kathy there in Montana as if it's anything to be considered legitimate. She should be disbarred and impeached and probably thrown out of the country, along with all the lawyers involved. Unbelievable. All right. Now, we go from Montana. We'll go just a little bit north into Canada, where you may recall we have reported here on the Weekly Worldview over the past couple of years the hysterical reports of dead bodies buried under Catholic Church schools in Canada. So wild accusations have been made against the Catholic Church in Canada that they basically murdered Indigenous Indian people for 150 years and secretly buried their bodies after, I don't know what, molesting them, doing medical experiments on them, you name it. The Catholic Church in Canada has been accused of all such violations. And of course, the Catholic Church has left themselves open to that with all the child molesters that have been involved there. But it has been a coordinated effort to attack Christianity in Canada. And now the accusations of mass graves under the churches there, where the Christians obviously killed all those poor Indian kids. Well, now there's been an excavation of one of the Catholic Church basements on the grounds of a former Manitoba residential school. And the excavation has yielded no evidence of human remains. That's right. But now they've only been digging for 4 weeks. So it's possible. Now, the radar technology that had detected 14 anomalies that the media and the leftist communists who have taken down Canada immediately went into hysterics over, accusing, obviously, those are 14 Indigenous Native American children that were murdered by the Catholics, obviously. Well, those 14 anomalies turned out to be a pile of rocks. No, not the mass graves, not the Indigenous children that were abused and mutilated and brutally murdered. It was actually a pile of rocks. And so now, the reporters at, let's see, where did I get this? This is called the countersignal.com. The reporters at the countersignal.com, they insert the following sentence. Of course, this finding doesn't mean no bodies exist at any former blah, 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 blah. So they have to insert the obligatory apology required so that you're not considered mean, I guess. You have to immediately say, now this doesn't mean that the Catholic Church doesn't brutally murder and kill Indian children. This doesn't mean that. Actually, that's what this means.
When the 14 bodies turned out to be a pile of rocks, that means, at least in this case, that the Catholic Church didn't murder and brutalize these Indian children. That's exactly what it means. And so you don't have to say that's not what this means. We all know that this doesn't mean nobody's ever killed anybody ever. You don't have to say that. But because we're all living through a giant Marxist humiliation ritual, you have to insert that. All right. So the good, fine reporters there at the Counter Signal go on to say what this does mean is to this day, no human remains have been found at any former residential school in high school. In Canada. In May of 2021, archaeologists detected what they believed to be 200 unmarked graves at a school in Kamloops. To this date, no excavations have been done at that location. And you might wonder why. If you want to prove that the Catholic Church are a bunch of maniacal killers burying Indian children, you'd think you'd want to go dig up the bodies and show everybody. But they've decided not to. Local elders of the Indian tribe out there say that intergenerational trauma is the reason for leaving the potential proof of a genocide buried. Uh-huh. But the CBC is intent on perpetuating the mass grave story. Why? Because they're communists and they've taken down Canada. They're a criminally insane pile of molesters and maniacs. And so 83 churches have been burned to the ground or vandalized in Canada since this coordinated political attack on Christianity has occurred. And when you ask the people, why can't we dig and uncover the truth? They seem to think that some cases are better left unsolved. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you. So from Kamloops in Canada, where we're just going to leave it all buried, you know, because it's so traumatizing. You know what would be traumatizing is to find out that all you communists who've taken over Canada have been lying. Willfully and knowledgeably, by the way. In order to defame anything that resembles Christianity, and that's all Catholicism is. It's something that resembles Christianity. It's kind of like Donald Trump. Donald Trump's no great godly man. He's no Christian man. But he reminds people of Christian people, and then so they hate him for that. Donald Trump just reminds people that there are still men who aren't queers, and they hate him because of that. And they hate the Catholic Church because it reminds them that there is a God and he's not them. And that Jesus Christ is the most famous person ever, more famous than any of them will ever be. And he exercises more authority over everything than any of them ever will, and they hate him for that. And the Catholic Church just reminds them of that. And so now let's go to, not Canada, but Serbia, where we check in with Novak Djokovic, who is a tennis player that we have reported on. This comes to us from the Widespread Panic file. Why is there widespread panic? Because Novak Djokovic has returned to the United States. That's right. And women, middle-aged women around him are masking up and hiding under the desks. The news reporters are putting on goggles and gloves and preparing to interview Novak Djokovic. The famous unclean professional tennis player. He was unclean. He returned to the United States last week for the first time since the communist maniacs finally overturned their ban on foreigners who have not taken the vaccine. There was a ban, you know. And just like everything else, well, all the people who knuckled under and gave in and took this vax, if they would have just had a modicum of I don't even want to call it bravery. It's not even bravery. Just a modicum of masculinity, common sense. Just wait it out. These are a bunch of hysterical terrified, tyrannical maniacs. This thing has got to run its course. That's what Djokovic decided. He just said, okay, well, I'm going to sit out a season or two of tennis, but I'm not going to inject this thing into my body because I don't know what it is, for crying out loud. So turns out he outlasted him, and now he's back in America. He says he has zero regrets about missing some of the world's most prestigious tournaments. You know what? In the long arc of history, who's going to care about the U.S. Open in 2021? Oh, yeah, that's going to be so important. You know, says Djokovic, as opposed to whatever. I might have a heart attack. I might never, ever be able to have kids. Who knows what's going to happen? You inject this experimental thing into your body. Okay, so by the way, I was reminded of this, and this is something I didn't cover, and I have to admit it's because at the time I was, I fell prey to the same type of hysteria that everyone else did. I had forgotten about this, but the reporters at Breitbart remind us that Djokovic famously defied global lockdowns in 2020 by organizing a series of tennis events that year that were called the Adria Tour. I remember this. So he decided, we're going to play tennis anyways. Well, that tour was abruptly ended when multiple participants tested positive for the virus. And you may remember that during the height of the hysteria, it was so politically incorrect to test positive while standing up for liberty or sanity or common sense. If you were just hiding under your desk, obeying everything with your mask on, and you tested positive, that was okay. We were all in this together. But if you were trying to live a normal life and try to return people from the edge of hysteria, like Djokovic tried to do, and you tested positive, well, you were practically a murderer. And so Djokovic was driven by the politically correct environment at the time to end his tennis tour. And I will confess that I didn't report on this because I felt embarrassed, which just shows that the hysteria was so thick at that time that it even blinded me upon occasion. I should have stood up for Djokovic and said, you shouldn't stop your tour. But I thought, oh, that's so embarrassing. They all tested positive. Anyway, so I want to apologize to Novak Djokovic for not backing him up. And if I could have, I would have attended one of those tennis games. I don't mind watching a tennis match every now and then. No, well, I mean, just to make a point is what I'm saying. Just to make a point. All right. Now, from Serbia and Djokovic and the tennis courts there, we move swiftly, briefly, however, into the science. Really, file? This won't be brief, actually. So there's a report here from the America First report about a new highly mutated strain of the COVID-19 virus. It's been discovered in the United Kingdom. It's a new variant that they're calling it BA.2.86, but that's not catchy, so they've also decided to call it Pirola. P-I-R-O-L-A, Pirola. Okay. They say it has a high number of genetic changes from the original Omicron. And was Omicron the original? I thought Omicron was the fourth or fifth generation. I thought the Omicron was the one where everyone finally realized that they weren't going to die when they got it.
Yeah, it was the fake one.
It was the first really fake one, right? After, yeah. Well, it was the first one where they tried to hype it up and they just couldn't get it over. It was like monkeypox. Just they couldn't make the Omicron. So anyway, this new strain could have up to 30 changes, and the mutations could dodge the body's immunity from prior infections or vaccination. You could experience the following symptoms: high fever, cough, cold, loss of the sensation of taste or smell. Okay, all right. Now,
Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, the director of the WHO, he says that testing and being vigilant will be vital in the fight against this new strain. That's he did an interview with the Mirror over in the United Kingdom. He says, we wouldn't know if the virus is changing in case we don't test enough. Testing is vital to see how the virus is evolving, said Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus over there at the WHO. So he wants to get us testing again because, I don't know, it was his biggest hit. He's going right back to, you know, you go with, you dance with who brung you. Testing. Mask, get hysterical. It made me famous. So, let's see. And now we have a quote. We have a quote here from Jesse Bloom, an evolutionary biologist from the Fred Hutch Cancer Center. So if you ever wonder why it is we can't seem to cure cancer, is because we've got evolutionary biologists working on the problem. And here's what he says about the Parola variant. He says, quote, deep mutational scanning indicates this variant will have equal or greater escape than XBB.1.5 from antibodies elicited by pre-Omicron and first-generation Omicron variants, unquote. That's Jesse, an evolutionary biologist who piles up a lot of words and appears to some people to be intelligent. But he does not fool anyone here at the Weekly Worldview. No, he does not. The reason is that evolutionary biology is a fake name for a real science. It's a faulty name for a real science. There is a real science behind what Jesse calls evolutionary biology. And what the reporters over at America First and what Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus calls mutations. See, these are not mutations. These people are morons. So the study of mutations in viruses and genomes in general is all a giant misunderstanding. And I have to confess that I've kind of misunderstood because I've been under the impression that evolutionary biology was just 100% stupidity. But now I realize it's simply a misnomer for the study of what creation scientists, specifically at the Institute for Creation Research, have identified as continuous environmental tracking. That's right. Creationists have dubbed this what we witness in a biological system and a creature adapting to its environment. They call it continuous environmental tracking. CET for short. That's almost as catchy as Parola. I don't know which one will catch on faster. Parola will get a lot more coverage in the secular media, but continuous environmental tracking, CET, I believe, will win the day at the end. Now, CET is a new model that flows from the latest findings in molecular biology, identifying innate sensing systems and logic mechanisms that direct targeted responses to environmental challenges. Living creatures are active problem-solving entities that continuously track changes. They continually track their changing environment, all the conditions that affect them, and through innate systems purposely adapt themselves over time to better fit existing niches or fill new ones. So that's what Jesse over at the Hutch Cancer Center, he thinks that's evolutionary biology. All these people think they're looking at evolution. They're not looking at evolution. They're looking at the expression of existing information within the creatures so that the creatures can live. And what's just happened, by the way, and now I think I understand this better based on my recent exposure to the CET model, is that what we've done to the coronavirus from 2019,
by vaccinating everyone with ever-changing vaccines is that we're basically putting pressure on this creature to adapt. And we may do something really dangerous. I mean, it's possible that we put a certain pressure on the genome of this virus, and things go very badly. It's similar to like what they did with the DART experiment, where they shot a satellite to hit the meteor. No, not a meteor, was it? Yeah. Or was it a comet? I forget. I should have had my notes together. But anyway, NASA decided that they were going to try to redirect an asteroid. That was it, the Dimorphos asteroid. And so they hit it with a satellite, and now they've loosened a bunch of rocks from it that are probably going to hit the Earth with the power of a nuclear blast. So anyway, it's unintended consequences. So when you think you're looking at evolution, but what you're actually looking at is the extremely sophisticated ability of creatures to express abilities to help them survive, what you just never know what your unintended consequences are going to be. When you go and you vaccinate everybody against a virus, you might just end up making that virus as scary as you thought it was the first time. It's the weekly review. No, they'll never let it go. Can't let it go. Never, never, never. All right, speaking of all that, we go back to Wuhan, China, the big Flinch file. Chinese property developer Evergrande filed for bankruptcy in the United States last week. I told you, I reported on this. I knew this was big. I knew this was coming, and it has come. This is one of their largest real estate concerns, is no longer a going concern. Yeah. Evergrande was once China's largest property developer, and much of Evergrande's corporate debt was held by U.S. and European institutional investors. So this has been brewing since 2021 when it first defaulted on its bonds, and all of these large institutional investors have been looking for some way, somehow, that they don't lose their shirt on this. And I don't think they found a way, although they always seem to find a way, but it doesn't seem like they found a way. So we'll see. But this is bad news for the global economy, what's happening in China. And the reason that comes out to us from the big Flinch file is because what's happening in China is directly related to their own hysterical, panic, tyrannical response to a relatively moderately dangerous cold virus. A moderately dangerous cold virus. And they reacted as badly as we did. Remember, China's, they just mimic. Back in the 70s, when everyone was hysterically panicked about population control, the Chinese bought into the forced abortion and the one child. They bought into all of that. They're hysterical leftists and they're tyrannical nanny state maniacs. And they destroyed their economy in a spate of tyrannical hysteria, a Flinch bigger than ours even. In fact, here's the next story. Ever since China suddenly abandoned its zero COVID policy, there have been signs that the country's economy was not recovering as much as the communists were acting like it was. Gee, surprising. Widespread concern about Beijing's approach to private enterprise has been spreading. Free market business people worry that China's pro-market stance won't last. I wasn't aware they had a pro-market stance. They're a bunch of communists. The only way you're allowed to have a free market business in China is if you pay a cut to the communists. And because of that, Well, because of that, when it came time for the lockdowns, I mean, it was just, it was orders of magnitude more devastating there than it was here. Anyway, foreign investors are worried that, for a lot of reasons, there's just the fundamental economics, but then there's also the new espionage law that was passed that, and by the way, that's what happened in Hong Kong right before the lockdowns. Even I almost forget that there were massive protests in Hong Kong over these espionage laws that the CCP passed. And suddenly, as China appeared teetering on the brink of something, suddenly the virus happened, and it was all just a whirlwind. Anyway, these espionage laws could be used against foreign investors. So if you're a foreign investor, you want to invest in China, you go do what's called due diligence. Right? You look into the concern that you're considering an investment. And well, now that due diligence is potentially a crime for which you could be arrested by the Chinese Communist Party and thrown into a black hole so deep nobody could ever find you again or hear from you. So that makes a foreign investor who wears a suit and tie and travels on a plane, makes him a little hesitant to go to China to perform his due diligence because he might get thrown into a gulag. That's not good for investments. But the, let's see, this is from Hot Air, the urinalists at Hot Air. They say that the core of China's problems is actually real estate. And I would say they're incorrect on that. The core of China's problem is atheistic communism. That's the core of their problem. It's manifesting in real estate and other things, but that's the real problem. And then they go on, Hot Air does, about how Country Garden, which is like their second largest real estate, they're about to go bankrupt as well. By early September, they will likely default on payments, and investors are going to take it. They're going to take it on the chin. And so, yeah, the China may not recover from their hysterical, panicked, tyrannical pandemic. Yeah, all right. Meanwhile, Xi Jinping is calling for patience. Oh, yeah, this is kind of hilarious. So, I mean, except for the fact that the world could collapse into World War III. So it's not like, ha-ha, funny, but anyway, the Chinese media last week broadcast a speech by President Xi Jinping calling for patience and resilience in the pursuit of the national rejuvenation. He was addressing hundreds of top party members in the speech that was aired last week widely. He was addressing top party members during a February 7th speech. February 7th, I read, and we all looked at our watch and thought, what, February 7th? Isn't it August? Yeah. Well, according to the reporters at scmp.com, the party journal, that's the media there, the organs in China, they regularly highlight internal leadership speeches months after they are given. They do that all the time. In fact, in communist countries, they even do that after the politician has been executed. He could already be dead, or he could have already been purged, or he's already in the bottom of a gulag, or, as I said, he's already dead. You know, like here with Dianne Feinstein. Jan Fetterman, right? Mitch McConnell. We have a similar thing over here with decrepit old people who are probably actually already dead, but they're just regurgitating speeches and so whatever. So I don't know. So like somebody's being paid royalties on Mitch McConnell still being there because or Dianne Feinstein. Why would these people be there? So there's no way Dianne Feinstein or Mitch McConnell have enough wherewithal to even know where they are half the time. So somebody's got to be running this. It's just like over in China. You know, there's powerful forces behind the scenes relying on income streams that are based on these old, decrepit. Actually, I think it's worse here.
I mean, at least Xi Jinping seems to know where he is. So, I mean, as opposed to John Fetterman. Okay. So, speaking of the Big Flinch, let's take it back to Minneapolis, where the Big Flinch actually occurred. Wasn't it Minneapolis where the police allowed the rioters to burn down their precinct station? I believe it was Minneapolis. So here we are, back at the site of the Big Flinch. We're back at the scene of the crime, so to speak. And the Minneapolis Police Department has just released their new use of force policy. And it is 72 pages long. So before a police officer in Minneapolis can use force, they have to run through 72 pages of policy notes and bullets in their mind before. Okay. And lawofficer.com asks the obvious question. You may be asking, why is the policy so long? Actually, I'm not asking that. I know exactly why. Because the Minneapolis Police Department has been put through a 3-year-long Marxist humiliation ritual, which is designed to produce something just like this. A 72-page long bow and nod and obeisance to the Marxist communists who took down Minneapolis in the summer of 2020. This is all by design. So the Marxist, Black Lives Matter, Antifa that have infiltrated the government in Minneapolis and America generally, I mean, they've basically, they're running things right now, that they made the Minneapolis Police Department write the following in their use of force policy. Here's what's actually written word for word. Sanctity of life and the protection of the public are the cornerstones of the MPD's use of force policy. Officers must recognize and respect the sanctity of life and value of all human life, and the need to treat everyone with dignity and without prejudice. Unquote. That's in the policy. They want that in the mind of the police officer. As he has to make a split-second decision as to whether or not to utilize force, they want that in the cop's mind. Why? Because they want the cop to get killed. That's why. Because they hate authority. They hate God. Cops remind them that there is a God, that there is an authority above them, and they hate that. And so they want all the cops to be killed by the criminals. And so they've put them through this, and they've released their 72-page sanctity of life. How dare you even put that in your mouth, you filthy communists? Sanctity of life. And then the reporters over at lawofficer.com ask the obvious question. They say, who will be judging the officer on this section that refers to the sanctity of life? And they, of course, at lawofficer.com, they don't know who. But we do. You know who's gonna judge officers as to how they responded to the sanctity of life? God is going to judge them. That's who. And so for every cop that drove by an abortion mill where innocent children were being butchered and slaughtered and burned and poisoned, God's going to hold you to account that you didn't do anything about it. Every cop, every DA, every judge, every legislator, every mayor, every governor, you're all going to be held to account as to how you upheld the sanctity of life. God's going to judge. And all you Marxist scum in the Minneapolis government and from Washington, D.C. all the way to Minnesota and Minneapolis, God's going to judge you. Yep. And in his use of force policy, it's already spelled out very clearly. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us. That's right.
That's right. You know, the Bible is actually more concise and consistent in its use of force policy than the communists who dictated the Minneapolis Police Department's new use of force policy. In fact, the whole Exodus chapter 20 and I think the whole book of Romans, you could get all that. That lays out. It's way more concise and far more consistent, I can assure you. All right, now, before I move on to the defund the police and the communists and the insurrection file, I do want to address real quick why I had to ask the question, why did my fake heart attack cost me $10,000? So I was pondering that question when I paid the final bill for my fake heart attack. I reported on the show that I thought I might have had a heart attack. It turned out I was faking it. I had faked my own self out. But that little trip to the ER cost $10,000. And that was the cash pay option, by the way. Because we do our best not to participate in the giant scam that is health insurance. And we just pay as we go. And we pay into the Medishare system to help our brothers and sisters when they have medical bills. So, but we don't participate in the giant scam. And so if these bills would have been submitted to our insurance company, they would have probably been closer to $30,000 or $40,000. But cash straight up, 10 grand. Why did my fake heart attack cost $10,000? Well, I've determined, as best I can tell, that it is due to the economics of sin. I know sin, it's not a popular concept. It's a word that people tend to shy away from, but I think that's what defines it. Because here's the thing. On the one hand, you have men suffering from pain or disease. I'm going to talk about the healthcare system, okay? On the one hand, you have men suffering from pain or disease, and on the other hand, you have men who genuinely want to alleviate suffering and cure disease. That's what that we have that. And when I say men, I mean everybody, okay? You know how I am. Now, the suffering man, he's willing to offer services and pay money to relieve his suffering. He's even prepared to offer considerable sums, depending on the pain and suffering. And his friends and his family may also be willing to pay money or offer goods and services to alleviate the pain and suffering. So the man who wants to help his fellow man, you would think that he should be able to help and be able to make a good living and support his family on the income he generates based on the value of alleviating the pain and the suffering or curing the disease. You should be able to make a good living doing that. And no matter how many people get involved and no matter how expensive and advanced the technology becomes, there would always be this reasonable balance between the desire to preserve wealth and the need to alleviate suffering. So that the guy helping, he shouldn't extort the guy who's suffering. And the guy who's suffering, he shouldn't be willing to bankrupt his family into the next generation just to alleviate his own suffering. There should be this balance, right? Enter sin, right? And between the love of money on the one hand and the fear of suffering and death on the other, there now exists the potential for an imbalance. So there's the potential. And then enter a third party willing to exploit that potential for his love of money and power. And before you know it, an exam that should take about an hour and cost a few hundred bucks takes 6 hours, and I end up paying $300 for an aspirin. And so we are living, I believe, on the extreme outer edge of the exploitation curve, where our healthcare system is so grossly, corruptly perverted and distorted that the entire calliope could collapse at any moment. And then everybody ends up poor and suffering. Even the tyrannical communist dictator scum and the salesmen running the insurance companies who thought that they would stuff enough money in their pockets that it would never affect them, even they end up suffering when the whole thing falls apart. All right, so there's my fake heart attack, 10 grand. All right. Now, let's go into the, we're going to return now to the insurrection, since I got that off my chest, ha, so to speak. So the insurrection file, in 2020, you remember there were calls to defund the police And the Free Beacon says it was Democrats, but it wasn't just Democrats. It was just a lot of young people corrupted, not necessarily by either political party, but straight up Marxist, communist, atheist agitators, people who should have been shot in the streets. As a matter of fact, this wasn't just Democrats. See all these news sites and aggregators, they're always the Democrat, Democrat, Democrat. This is far beyond Democrats. But anyway, there were calls to defund the police. Cities, including Chicago, New York, Portland, Washington, D.C., caved to the demands, and they cut funding to the police. And now what's happened? Well, obviously, crime has gone to out-of-control levels in many of these cities. And now Democrat leaders want to send in the troops, meaning, that's right, the National Guard. Shock of all shocks, say the folks over at the Free Beacon. Look what happened. Now we have D.C. council member Trayon White calling for the National Guard to come into Washington, D.C. We've got Illinois State Representative LaShawn Ford says that sending in the National Guard into Chicago should not be off the table. And shazam, Gavin Newsom deployed the National Guard in San Francisco in April to help with fentanyl. Or not to help with fentanyl, although who knows, Gavin Newsom. So anyway, the Free Beacon reports this as if this is just a bunch of foolish, short-sighted, utopian Democrats. They're hoist on their own petard. Now they want the National Guard. See, we told you. You darn Democrats. But this is not just a bunch of foolish, short-sighted, utopian Democrats. Hoist on their own petard. No, this is a coordinated effort to federalize the police. All these Democrats and communists and Marxists, they didn't call to defund the police because they thought we actually didn't need police and we could just send social workers. No, they want to federalize the police. They want to break the local police departments because tyrants and dictators, they like to have soldiers. They like federal soldiers. They don't like local police. And they are intentionally destroying the local police on purpose. And that's why the next time they rally in the streets and they need to be shot, like machine gunned in the streets. That's what needs to happen to these people. Because if you don't, if the local police don't machine gun these people, eventually the federal authorities will machine gun the local police and the local citizens. And so we need to machine gun first. In proper authority, by the way, the local police have the authority to machine gun rioters in the streets. In fact, they have the obligation to machine gun rioters in the streets. Okay, and that's how you tell the communist, Marxist, insurrectionists that they are no longer in operation. That's how you shut all that down, is you machine gun them in the streets. Okay, not to put too fine a point on it. Let's go now to the justice file where we find out why the insurrection has been allowed to metastasize as far as it has. It's because in America, we don't know what to do with our enemies anymore. The people who want to take us down and enslave our children, steal everything we have and kill us, we don't know what to do with them. Case in point, Breitbart reports that the suspected architect of the September 11th, 2001 attacks and his fellow defendants may never face the death penalty under plea agreements now under consideration. And so you're sitting here thinking, wait a minute. We haven't adjudicated this? Didn't we catch all these people like 15 years ago? There's still a trial going on? Okay. So once you get over that, how ridiculous that is, then you finish reading the story and they report that military prosecutors and defense lawyers began exploring a negotiated resolution to the case about a year and a half ago. Why? Well, they're all approaching retirement age and they're thinking, let's just cash this thing in and go play golf, for crying out loud. So, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is still on trial, for crying. Anyway, he should have been questioned and summarily executed by the military. So this is what I say we don't understand. We don't understand what's going on. So the September 11th, that was an act of war. That was not a crime. These guys were not to be investigated and put on trial. They should have been interrogated by the military, taken out back and shot and put into a ditch. But we don't know what to do with our enemies anymore. Instead of machine gunning the first phalanx of Antifa that approached the police in Minneapolis, they just ran away and let them burn down the station house. And so you don't recover from that. There is no recovery from that. It's just now a slow or rapid, I'm not sure, descent into tyranny and at best, just Midland, like Western European socialist, except that America's not like that. We tend to get far more violent. But let's not be depressed about anything. Life is looking good, right? We're winning. We overturned Roe, right? We move now to the death after Roe file. I had called this the life after Roe file, but I was not able to do that. I had to cross out life. And I had to put in death because, here, just listen to the story. Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America, that's the group, and it has too many words in its title. Do you know why? Because it's the marrying up of two pro-life industry hack groups that have been around way too long. And they joined forces so that they could pad their retirements more efficiently. They put their mailing list, their bilking lists together. Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America, is a pro-life organization, according to Breitbart. And their president, Marjorie Dannenfelser, said the following, quote, regarding the 2024 election, I'm sorry, SBA President Marjorie Dannenfelser said the following, quote, it's possible that we would endorse a candidate, but it's also possible that we won't. Unquote. So we can already tell she's very smart. She went on, quote, and we have a very bright line that hasn't changed. You must communicate your federal minimum standards, unquote. She has a bright line that hasn't changed. You need to tell us your federal minimum standards for what? Mm-hmm. For killing children. She wants to know how they would rein in the extremes of California, Illinois, and New York who advocate abortion right up to the end, unquote, she says. They're crazy. They want to kill children right up to the end, meaning right up to delivery. So Dannenfelser has called on Republican presidential candidates to support a federal abortion restriction as a condition for receiving their influential endorsement. Well, first of all, Marjorie, your endorsement isn't that influential anymore because you've already lost the culture war. You don't even realize it yet. I understand that you're still able to bilk certain gullible morons who've been on your mailing list for 25 years. Do they do that just to ameliorate their own guilt over having lost the culture war and sacrificed three generations of children to the maniacs? So, obviously, you'll retire well, and I'm sure, you know. But you're not that influential anymore. Dannenfelser went on to say, Republican candidates must push forward on offense to expose the extreme, up until the moment of birth, position of Democrats when it comes to the killing of innocent children. And so, Marjorie Dannenfelser is a child killer. How do I know that? Because she's willing to align politically with child killers. And now going back to September 11th, this goes back to something George W. Bush said. One of the few intelligent things he ever said. Although he didn't say it right. So I have to correct myself. It's the stupidest president we ever had. He said, if you're with the, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists, I think is how he said it. More precisely, it would be if you're with the terrorists, you're a terrorist. So now I can't even say it because it was a Bob Enyart correction of George W. Bush that I'm trying to recall, and I can't recall it. George Bush said, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists.
And Bob Enyart said, you're either with us or you're a terrorist. So anyway, Marjorie, if you're with the child killers, you're a child killer. And if all you're against is up until the moment of birth, radical Democrat abortion, that means you're for all kinds of other abortions. So you're a child killer. Marguerite Dannenfelser is a child killer, calls herself an influential pro-life American. And I would agree that she's influential because Marguerite Dannenfelser and her group and National Right to Life and the rest of the whole pro-life industry, they've basically now taken the right to life off the table. It's just when and where are we going to kill the kids and where do we cash the checks? Which way is it to the golf course? Okay. So Marguerite Dannenfelser, just shame on you. You should resign in shame. You should be driven from your office by the people on your mailing list. And the fact that they don't understand that that's what should be done, it's just all right, what do I want to end on? Here we have from the Real Hard Science File. this is from the Real Hard Science File. Russia says that their Luna 25 spacecraft has unfortunately crashed into the moon. That's right. We have a quote from Roscosmos said, we lost contact with spacecraft on Saturday. The apparatus moved into an unpredictable orbit and ceased to exist as a result of a collision with the surface of the moon. Which was, turned out the surface of the moon is real hard. That's science. It was scheduled to land on Monday, but unfortunately it crashed. It was in a race with an Indian spacecraft expected to reach the moon by August 23rd. I guess they were both trying to land on the moon's south pole, which apparently is easier said than done. And I guess we'll find out in the next week or so if the Indian kids were better at their math than the Russian kids. And just a note, this is the same Russian state that is a threat to conquer the entire world if we don't stop them in Ukraine. They just crashed their spaceship into the moon. So we're supposed to sacrifice 500,000 men and countless billions, hundreds of billions of dollars to stop Russia from conquering the world. Forgive me if I'm somewhat skeptical of all that. Meanwhile, from the Dim New World File, 14 American cities have some ambitious climate targets that they have. That's right, they're part of the C40 cities. C40 cities climate leadership group. Their goals by the year 2030, how many years is that? That's less than 7 years away. They plan on hitting these ambitious targets. 0 kilograms of meat consumed. 0 kilograms of dairy consumed. 3 new clothing items per year, 0 private vehicles, and 1 short-haul return flight, less than 1,500 kilometers, for every person every 3 years. That's the future of urban consumption in a 1.5-degree world. Oh, these are all based on that report from that. C40 is what they're called, C40. Organization funded by Michael Bloomberg exclusively. This is Michael Bloomberg's attempt to make up for the fact that he became a multi-billionaire and never contributed anything for the good of mankind. Only grubbing after money his entire career. That's all he cared about. He was obsessed with it 24/7. And now he's old and he realizes it just doesn't matter. And so he mistakenly thinks he's now got to save the world. He's slipped into the delusional idea that he's God. And so this is his thing. Austin, Boston, Chicago, Houston, LA, Miami, New Orleans, New York City, Philly, Phoenix, Portland, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., and Seattle. 0 kilograms of dairy, 0 kilograms of meat, 0 private vehicles by 2030. Now, the advocates say they are not advocating for the wholesale adoption of these targets in C40 cities. No, rather, they just want to provide these as reference points when governing officials are, you know, concerning long-term urban visions. So they want to do it. They just don't want to scare you by letting you know they want to do it right now. But they want it right now. That's when they, if they could have it, that's when they would want it. But they're willing to let it slide for a few years, just as long as they eventually get it. And here at The Worldview, we want to make sure that at some point these people get it. We definitely want to make sure that they get it. All right, should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.